Hey, it's Darren Johnson, Weekly Newspaper Podcast. I figured I'd squeeze in a quick podcast as I'm procrastinating. I have a bunch of things to do. As you know, I also teach at a college, and I just submitted final grades, and now I'm like, exhausted. I've been going through some dental issue, and, you know, with dental insurance is the biggest scam going. It's just like you still have to pay a lot. So, you know, you go to the dentist and they try to figure out your insurance and then try to figure out what they can get out of it and then schedule an appointment to do the things that have to be done and get clearance and all of that. So they can't see me for a couple more weeks because I guess what I have isn't urgent, but it is annoying. And I go through like these intervals where I have pain and such. And it just like makes my mind wander, you know, when I have that pain. But also just like the exhaustion of finishing a college semester. And I just got out a 48-page edition of the local paper, the Journal and Press. And it's just been like a lot. So it's like I'm trying to breathe. I figure I'll squeeze in a quick podcast. And then I'll get going at, let's say, 10:30 this morning after, you know, having checked my emails and done a few other things, but I feel like I'm procrastinating, but probably by other people's standards, I'm not. Like little videos will pop up on my phone and I see people, what shows up on my phone a lot with the reels are people that go to flea markets and thrift stores and they buy old video game units, you know, like the Sega Dreamcast or something like that. The original PlayStation, you know, they'll go buy old video game units and then I guess flip them online and these little videos show up and they're kind of annoying, but I guess they're little time wasters and they remind me like I used to do that in the early days of eBay. I'd go to thrift stores and pick up stuff and then put it online and now there's just so much competition, but back then, you know, it would be a few extra bucks, so I'd be able to put stuff on eBay, and it would be kind of nice. So, you know, those are, I guess the algorithm knows, you know, maybe reminiscing or being nostalgic or something, but it feeds me those videos, and they make me procrastinate even more, so I have to stop watching those videos. Speaking of videos, I have the Netflix screensaver screen on right now. So, you know, while I do work on my computer, I put on Netflix and I'm not going to put it on now, obviously, because I'm podcasting, but it has like the screensaver. So it shows the various things they have coming up. Jerry Seinfeld did something called Unfrosted, which looks pretty bad. It looks pretty corny. I guess maybe I'll look at it just to see how bad it is, but Seinfeld really, he really hit the jackpot when he found Larry David, I guess, and did the Seinfeld show, because otherwise his stuff is pretty corny, or it's maybe smug or something, but it's just not a good flavor, I'd say. And but Seinfeld the show was all-time best, you know, it was excellent, so I guess he had lightning in a bottle there. But one thing they're also showing is the Tom Brady roast, which I did already see, and I watched it with my wife, and we were surprised at how, like, bawdy it was, you know, how over the top it was. There were a lot of, like, un-PC jokes, and it makes me think, like, I know Netflix has kind of stood its ground and still has aired, like, Dave Chappelle, who's, you know, sometimes rankles people, but Netflix is kind of like stood its ground as far as free speech goes and being, you know, against political correctness and all that. And I think maybe that movement is over, judging by this roast that they just aired, which was like, and I see people are sharing that, like little snippets of that in Reels and TikTok and such. And it was, you know, definitely bawdy with jokes that were, you know, kind of like jokes that weren't as common in the past several years, but were common in like the 1980s, you know, lots of gay jokes and penis jokes and things of that nature that have just definitely became un-PC in recent years. And I'm thinking, you know, we're out of the pandemic, maybe, you know, people are realizing, hey, speech is speech. And we've had some movements that right now it's the Palestinian Israeli protests. And, you know, what happened there was pretty grim. And maybe people are realizing that actions speak louder than words. And the, you know, what happened in Gaza, Palestine, etc., whatever side you're looking at it from, you know, it has been pretty catastrophic. Sorry for these beeps going off. I guess I have my phone a little bit too close to my microphone. But, you know, what happened there was, you know, like, I don't want to go into gory details, but things that were disgusting, you know, physically disgusting. And then when you think about that, and you think about, like, all the horrible things that were done to human beings by human beings, maybe someone, you know, doing a penis joke isn't, maybe that's not so bad after all. Like, maybe we can just say, all right, it's a penis joke. It's not like you know, some of the things that happened in the Middle East that are catastrophic. So, you know, maybe everyone's kind of grown up a little and are a little less pearl clutchy, you know, about words, and they're realizing that there are people doing actions that are way more diabolical than any words could ever conjure up. Now, if the words lead to action, if, like, you're doing jokes that are disparaging of a certain group, and then people get mobilized, and then they start discriminating against that group in some way or another, all right, you know, that's when words have gone too far. But if it's a bunch of drunk former jocks on stage doing locker room humor, you know, can we give that a pass? You know, can we, like, not pretend that we never heard these jokes in private before and just let it go? You know, so I think people are maturing a little bit as far as that goes. That was a phase we all went through, and maybe it had something to do with the pandemic and people panicking during the pandemic and trying to control, you know, hey, wear a mask and don't say this and don't say that. And so maybe that movement's over. I also think political people are realizing that you're going to lose a lot of voters if you get into the whole political correctness as far as speech goes. You know, as far as actions goes, yeah, sure, you should be politically correct, but as far as speech goes, to cancel people, you know, it sometimes is a little rash, and a lot of times, over time, it looks like, you know, maybe these people land on their feet after saying something politically incorrect and being canceled, and then history proves them right. I guess not what they said was right, but that maybe the reaction against them was a little bit heavy-handed, and maybe some people just have moments where they say something and they make mistakes, and that's that. So, you know, that's what's on my screen right now. Some news. I started a Substack, which I mentioned briefly, but I think you should go on it. It's I'm doing it daily being Monday through Friday. I'm taking weekends off. But I started it for my local newspaper because I already had an email list. And but other people I find are signing on from all over the country. And I do talk about journalism issues, but I also do it from the perspective of my local newspaper, so the local people are also interested in it. And it's been building. I haven't really been pushing it that hard, but it's already gotten over $600 in subscriptions. I wouldn't call them donations. I'd call them subscriptions, which, you know, and I just started it May 1st. And right now, I think it's May, I don't know, 9th or something. So already gotten that amount. Now, there's no way I'm going to keep that pace going. Initially, it was just new and people were donating. But if I get, like, you know, a couple of those a week, a couple of, like, subscriptions a week, it could build to something. So in today's Substack, and the address is journalpress.substack.com. journalpress.substack.com. And if you could be a paid subscriber, that's really great. You know, you could even do, like, just monthly, where they pull out $8 a month. And of course, Substack and Stripe, the company that, you know, collects the credit card fees, they take their cut. So it's really, like, for me, like $6. But I guess it's, that's just the cost of doing business. So go to Substack and follow that. But maybe that could be another little revenue stream. Will it ever be the same as having a daily newspaper? I don't know. You know, I think with Substack, you have to try to be a little bit provocative. You can't be boring. And newspapers, you know, sometimes newspapers have to cover the boring things, even though, you know, they're important, but they have to cover the boring things sometimes. And if you're boring in Substack, you probably won't get subscribers. So I have to be a little edgier. You could be a little bit more first person. You could offer opinions a little bit in Substack. So there's a different, you know, different avenues you can go. I don't think it'll ever replace what is like a fact-gathered, substantial newspaper, but you can release little bits here and there. So again, that address is journalpress.substack.com. And it makes me wonder, you know, what would happen if the 182-year-old newspaper I run in town, in which I really don't run it in town, I run it in my living room, but I have fantasies of of going back to the days when, you know, newspapers had offices. Even the daily newspapers have sold their offices and are working from, like, Starbucks or whatever. But, you know, I have fantasies about opening an office and people walking in and saying, hey, you know, here's my letter to the editor, and it's all typed up, you know, with a typewriter and on that waxy paper they used to give you when you had a typewriter, you know, that you could erase with. I don't even know if you could find that anymore, but it was kind of cool. And before whiteout even was that common, they had like this type of typing paper that you could erase the, like, if you made a mistake, if you typed the wrong letter, you could erase that letter with a regular eraser and then put it back in the typewriter, line it up, and type the right letter and fix it. You know, and that's kind of like the fantasy, you know, like the mayor pops in and says, you know, your headline was wrong. You know, we're not doing this. We're actually doing that, you know, and then, you know, you get into an argument with the mayor or something. And, you know, that's kind of a fantasy that I have. And it seems like that when newspapers were like that, almost feels like a dream at this point because it was so long ago. But, you know, that's still a fantasy. And maybe, you know, as local businesses, it's harder and harder for a local business to make a go of it in these small towns like the one I'm in. You know, maybe as more real estate avails itself, you know, maybe I could go back to that someday. I think you can't just open a plain old newspaper business on Main Street. I think you have to have other things for sale in it. So our town, for example, doesn't have a like a Kinko's or, you know, anything like that, so where people can make copies or do faxing or mail stuff. There is a post office, but they take like an hour lunch, and during like the only time when you can go there, and they're not open before I would go to work. They're not open when I get back from work. So the post office, and they don't have like self-weighing machines or anything like the big post offices have, or stamp machines or anything like that. So you could only catch it during hours when you wouldn't be, you know, available to go to this post office. So I think if there were like, if it were a newspaper / UPS store / Kinko's, and people can kind of wander in and you could help them out, you know, because you're a newspaper, you know how to do layout and you know how to work the machines, I think that would probably fly in my town. But, you know, how many hours are there in the day and who wants to take that risk? I have enough of other things going on, but I think if I were to open a Main Street newspaper office, it would have to have something else that it actually sells. And I wonder what would happen in this town if the 182-year-old newspaper were to go out of business. I kind of saved it from the jaws of death, which is like a reoccurring theme in my life. You know, I kind of like, that's, if I were to assess myself, I'd say I'm good at fixing things that need to be fixed, but not big picture enough to take them to like the large. Like I'm too much of a lone wolf, maybe too much of not enough of a delegator, not trusting enough of other people. Maybe I don't, like paperwork and doing all the forms and stuff, like to have like employees and that type of thing. So I get gig people and say, hey, here's $50, gig person, do this, instead of like having a formal employee. Hey, Janet, how's your day? Here, it's your birthday. Here, we got a cake. Let's all sign Janet's card. That's not my personality type. My personality type is, hey, we have to put this newspaper together, and hey, you know how to write a little bit. I'll help you out, and and things like that. That's more my personality type. So I'm good at fixing something that pretty much doesn't work anymore, but then if it came to like corporatizing, that's not my thing. So I needed to be like, and time's running out, I needed to bump into, if you watched like the Founder movie about McDonald's, and it's a great movie, it's one of the best business movies I'd say there is. If you watched the Founder movie, let me get this phone call and I'll get back to the Founder movie. In the Founder, Ray Kroc, the McDonald's founder, played by Michael Keaton, who's a great actor. I believe everything he does in every film. He like just does a really good job. In any case, he was like a foundering, kind of a lone wolf like me, businessman, and he eventually bumped into someone, I guess in his early to mid 50s, late in life, who helped him with the big picture financial stuff. And he was able to turn McDonald's and, from a couple of stores to like this regional chain and the national chain, and he just needed like the formula and the person who wasn't it wasn't shy with playing with numbers. And I haven't encountered that person. I don't think those type people are attracted to the print newspaper business anyway. So it's not like, they're looking around, because print newspapers just aren't trendy or cool or whatever. Even though I think that you can build a decent business in the print world still. It's just that the word is out there that you'll never be like, William Randolph Hearst ever again. Like that won't happen with the way things are now. So the types of people who might be attracted to scaling businesses, they'll be attracted to businesses that scale a lot faster and bigger than a print publication would. So I don't think I will be Ray Kroc, who bumps into, hey, that money man who really under, or woman, or whatever, who understands like, yeah, you kind of have a good idea there, but if you did this, this, and this, someone without, sometimes too, if you're not a hardcore capitalist, not that I have anything wrong with capitalism, I think it's a great system, beats the alternative. But if you're not, also, I'm a person that writes newspapers and does the editorial stuff. So I think like a pure business person wouldn't have that same level of concern about, hey, I might offend someone, or I might be wrong, or I might be whatever. They would just see it as the bottom line, like, yeah, you're going to break some eggs, and that's the way things go. So they wouldn't have those pangs of potential guilt, I guess, by growing the business. So, that's, that's kind of where I think a lot of newspapers are at that are trying to make a go of it. They just don't have, you can't find salespeople anymore to sell ads for a print publication. They're off doing other things at this point, more lucrative fields. So it's kind of a downward spiral from a business standpoint. It's not like we're going to find some new recipe to suddenly become the next like Citizen Kane or something like that. All right, in any case, what if this newspaper didn't exist, this 182-year-old paper that's been in this town for a long time? And I want to answer this question in a way that is fair. I think so many newspaper people come onto podcasts and they cheerlead. They either cheerlead for their product that they currently have, and you know, meanwhile, fast forward 2, 3, 4 years from now, that product might not exist anymore, but they're cheerleading and pretending everything is all right because they have stakeholders. They have employees. They have maybe investors. They have the community. And you can't be honest and say, yeah, things aren't, you know, that great financially, and I don't know if we're going to be around in a couple of years. You can't say that. So they cheerlead. Or they're of the camp where the future is digital and, you know, we're doing X, Y, and Z digital. And how many of those digital startups are still around in 2, 3 years or whatever? There was a digital startup called The Messenger that tried to be a national online-only newspaper just at the end of last year. And it was bankrupt by the beginning of this year, despite having raised millions of dollars and hired, like, you know, the best people, and no one cared. It just bled money, and that was it, you know. So it just died almost instantly. And you see that with other ones, you know, some publications like Vice or BuzzFeed or those types of things. They're a shell of their former selves, and their value has dropped to almost nothing. So digital isn't, you know, there isn't a clear path digitally either. So I want to answer this honestly, like, what would happen to this town? I don't want to be like, oh, you know, this town would fall into disarray if the local newspaper didn't exist. If this 182-year-old paper stopped existing, the government would suddenly become corrupt, and you know, no one would run for office, and school taxes would go out of control, and because no one would be watching the schools. And you know, let's be real, most community papers aren't really like they aren't really Woodward and Bernstein, you know. They're not like, and they don't have the resources, especially anymore, to dig into all of these matters, you know, to dig into the school budget and then even if you were to dig into the various budgets and politicians and such, you know, is that the best use of your time? Is that what readers want to read? Or would they rather read about, hey, there's a new business on Main Street, I want to, you know, what are they selling? Or here's someone interesting who does something interesting. Or do they want, like, you know, to know about the arts or sports or some of the other things? So even if these small town papers that are struggling can barely afford to hire anyone, even if they did, you know, do like that Pulitzer type investigative reporting, would there be a market for it? And there probably hasn't ever been a market for it at the weekly small town level. So, you know, let's not fool ourselves into thinking that if this 100 plus year old paper were to stop existing in your town, that things would suddenly become totally corrupt because there's no watchdog in place. And like the daily newspaper journalists like to also pretend that they're like the watchdogs for the community. But in reality, the daily papers are so depleted that they can't do it either. There's no one to really do that kind of work. But there are people who go online and they'll post on Facebook. Like recently in our town, everyone got like these assessment letters saying that their house is being assessed at a higher value. And that created a whole uproar on Facebook. And I didn't even cover it in the paper because the uproar, like, happened on Facebook. I had already gone to press, and now it's kind of dying down, so I'm not going to go back to it. It's not, you know, it's for a paper that doesn't come out every single day. Stories come and go, and this one came and went on Facebook. Eventually, saner minds prevailed, and people realized just because if your assessment goes up, it doesn't mean your taxes are going up. But it created a whole uproar, because if everyone's assessment goes up and the town doesn't spend any more money, or, you know, keeps its budget stable, then you'll just be taxed at a different rate, you know, based on the new valuation. And property values have shot up in the town, like they have in a lot of towns. So it's probably the fairest system is just to assess people's property based on what the perceived value is of their property, as best as an assessor could figure out, based on market trends and things of that nature, what similar houses sell for on your block, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, you get a tax bill. My town, county tax bill hasn't gone up dramatically in the 15 years that I've lived here. You know, a little bit here, a little bit there. But my assessment has gone way up. So the two don't really necessarily go hand in hand. But people were up in an uproar about it. And it showed, like, people got on Facebook, and some town officials, I'm sure, looked at it and asked some questions. And some people in the know got on. And while it wasn't as neat and tidy as a newspaper would be in writing, like, an 800-word article on, hey, you got an assessment letter, here's what it means, it got the job done. You know, some kooks got on, had their opinion, and some, you know, some people were overly emotional, and some people are just cheapskates and don't want to pay any taxes, and some, you know, there's all different types of people that got on there. Some people felt they were over-assessed. You know, what avenues do they have if they were over-assessed? Maybe they were. You know, so you can grieve it. You know, so all the information got out there in a very sloppy way, but it got out there. And so if the local paper didn't exist, let's not trump ourselves up, you know, not to use the word trump incorrectly, but let's not trump ourselves up and say, oh my God, the town would just fall into disarray if a newspaper didn't exist. You know, the government would just become, they would just start taxing everyone and no one would stand up for people. I think people would stand up for themselves and they'd figure out a way to get the word out. And maybe, you know, maybe that is more effective to just go on Facebook and to openly gripe about it. And then you get people in the know chiming in. And, you know, so maybe that's not so bad. You know, it takes a lot more words. It's much less succinct. But it gets it out there, puts the issue out there. The issue has its lifespan. It gets hot, and then it dies off, and people move on to the next issue, just like they would with a newspaper. But, you know, I think there would be some negatives if the paper didn't exist. First off, the town, which very much banks on its history, the history of its buildings, history is a part of its tourism trade. It gives people a lot of civic pride, and it is it's something that makes people feel like our town is more special than other towns. And in our county, I looked it up, our town has the highest median income, household income, in the county. And our town is one of the only towns with a newspaper. Our town also has higher voter turnout. And I would say that a newspaper giving a platform to candidates who might not have much of a budget, I think that might help encourage some people to run for office if they know they're going to be interviewed by the paper and they can get the word out. I would also venture to say that if the right person is in charge of the town paper, that person can have a lot of influence with elections. As long as they're not heavy-handed about it, that person can have a lot of influence with the way elections go at the town level, and at, or whatever it is, village level or whatever. That person can have a lot of say, because these town elections are like, you know, 500 to 400, you know, as far as the votes go, or what, the newspaper can't sway 100 votes. And sometimes it's just the newspaper shedding light, maybe under the wrong owners, some candidates won't get any attention, and maybe they're deserving candidates, maybe they're good candidates, but they won't get attention. And if you have an editor who's into giving people a voice and giving people equal space and that type of thing, and understanding, you know, we're in a democracy and various candidates should have a chance to get the word out, that might help those candidates that might be less known to get known. So it could help in that regard. And of course, competitive elections are a watchdog on their own. The local newspaper editor should spur debate through letters in the paper. You can tell if a paper is a real paper by if it gets letters to the editor or not. Spurs it through letters. Editorials that are even-handed and hosting events that are political in nature, but hosting them in an impartial way. And then doing things like this podcast and having, you know, political people come on and you know, asking them fair questions, not kissing up to them, you know, being that voice of reason. Whereas I find that someone who isn't a journalist, when they do interviews, they sometimes get wooed by that person, and a hardened journalist wouldn't get wooed by a politician. So, you know, they would ask tougher questions. I host debates at the local school, and, you know, the candidates either show up or they don't show up, but the ones that don't show up lose the election, you know, if they don't show up to the debate that I schedule. So, you know, that's just the fact of the matter. You know, you have to play ball with that newspaper. So if the newspaper didn't exist, probably there'd be less voter turnout. That's fair to say, less civic engagement, and less of a recording of history in our region, because the paper has been this history book that's 182 years old. If it were to suddenly stop, that would have some kind of like psychic effect on the community. There's another community, and it rates towards the bottom of that list of median income. And it's only 8 minutes from here. And they lost their newspaper a long time ago, like 50 years ago plus. They had a newspaper, but they lost it. And it's actually a larger community than this one. And who is recording their history? They do have a town historian, but, you know, the historians tend to not be the most, they're not mass media magnates. They're not getting the word out in any useful way. You know, they might have a little web page that 7 people follow. You know, they're not the newspaper. Like, we have historical columns and archives, and we're on the New York State Historic website and all of that. So our history is firmly entrenched. If someone buys a building in town, they can look up the whole history of that building. They can find old articles from our newspaper, frame them, put them up on the walls, and say, hey, this building used to be a clothing store in the 1920s, you know, or something like that. And they could find old ads from the paper and, you know, give everyone a sense of charm and feeling and a sense of place. A restaurant opened in town, and it took over a building that used to be owned by a restaurant of the same name, obviously different owners a long time ago. But they incorporate history a lot in their decorations on the walls and in their advertising, and they still advertise in the paper because they realize, like, this is part of a tradition. So, and people, you know, it might be subconscious, but people do follow traditions. So I think if this newspaper didn't exist, and it might, you know, who knows, might not exist in the future. I'm going to keep going. I'll fulfill the subscriptions, and, you know, but eventually will it get to a point where I'm too old and tired and no one wants to take it over, and it's really not making any money, and I have other things I could be doing, and I have to start worrying about my retirement. Like, do I want to be still keep funding this newspaper that, you know, it doesn't, maybe it breaks even, but it doesn't, you know, it's, if you have a job that break, if you have a business that breaks even, then it's not really providing for your future. And I might have to get to a point where, like, hey, you know, I might have medical problems, or I might need a retirement home, or inflation might be out of control and I need to do something. You know, I might need money down the road more than what this paper can give me. But if no one's willing to take it over, I would create an exit plan, fulfill the subscriptions, and, you know, come out with a paper that costs less to print. You know, maybe I would go all black and white and keep it going, but as it would start to fade to attrition and cut columns here and there, and eventually, you know, it would, as the last subscribers' subscriptions ran out, you know, it would cease to exist. And then maybe we'd become like this other town that's 8 minutes away that has lots of empty storefronts with cracked windows, and the town just looks like crap. It has low, you know, higher crime rate. It has lower property values. It has, now I'm not saying the newspaper is the reason for it. You know, it has a lower median income. I'm not saying the newspaper is like, you know, $2 newspaper that you buy at the grocery stores, maintaining our higher quality of life here in this town. But spiritually, you know, is the, if you believe in karma and all of that, if you have no one really competently recording your history, giving people a sense of civic pride, letting people know about candidates, and letting people know about, you know, the good things that are going on in town, maybe people start to think less of it. It's like, hey, if, you know, that person that prints a newspaper that gets distributed at the grocery store doesn't care about us and no one wants to take over this paper, maybe no one's recording our history. So maybe what we do doesn't matter. Maybe we could just let that storefront go and not paint our house and not mow the lawn and, you know, maybe, you know, shoplift. And, you know, maybe like these little things psychically start to happen. Maybe another Family Dollar comes to town and has some crappy looking, and there's no one there to write a letter to the editor and say, hey, don't we have enough Family Dollars in town? And, or if we are going to have a Family Dollar, let's make sure it looks good and they follow some kind of zoning law or something like that. And, you know, maybe the school district, you know, starts to, because there's no clippings, you know, the local school district here, they put clippings of our newspaper all up on the walls and such, you know, like so-and-so won the spelling bee and whatever won the league championship and someone won the debate. And, you know, we put those things in the paper and they post them up on the wall. And yeah, most of the parents don't buy the paper. Very few probably do. But, you know, maybe they like to know it exists. Maybe there's something there that having this record somehow makes the town feel prouder in some way, and that there's someone paying attention. And, you know, they're not, you know, maybe most of the town isn't generous enough to, or big picture thinking enough to support this newspaper. Maybe businesses, you know, a lot of the businesses here, maybe they're just out to make a buck and they don't see the value of wanting that permanence of being in a newspaper so that people see it in the archives for years to come. Maybe they don't see that value. And, you know, and I would tell these businesses that they're being wrongheaded, and not that they have to support the local paper. Maybe they don't see, maybe their type of business, you know, maybe they don't feel like it would benefit from buying an ad, as low cost as our ads are. But people in the community, they do notice if a business is giving back. And a business can post on Facebook all they want about how great they are, but that doesn't result in people being loyal to your business. There's like a revolving coffee shop in town, and their only mode of advertising is posting on Facebook. And they get like their sycophants that like it. You know, here's a picture of a muffin that we made or something. You know, hey, you know, And that's all they're advertising. And they always cry poverty that they can't advertise. Even like a $55 ad in the local paper, they cry poverty about that. But what is that? It's like, you know, six customers stopping by, grabbing a coffee and a bagel. The newspaper wouldn't result in six people coming to their business. But you have to also realize that if they come to your business and they like it based on that newspaper ad, then they'll keep coming back. And they'll tell their friends. And people in the community, I've noticed, and you know, this coffee shop keeps going, this location keeps going out of business like other businesses. And I've noticed the ones that don't stick around for more than a year or two, and then they say, oh, you know, we didn't get supported by the local community. Well, you didn't advertise first. And were you generous to the community? Or did you just view the community as a bunch of people to give you money? Did you support Little League teams? Did you support the local food pantry that does fun drives? I don't see your name on their big poster. Yeah, I don't see. Are you supporting the local parade? I don't see your name on the sign that says, "Hey, our proud sponsors are." I don't see XYZ Coffee House on that big poster. People in the community notice if these businesses are carpetbagging or if they are if they're real and they're here to stay. And as a newspaper owner, I sponsor stuff all the time, you know, and I'll give them free ads. I'll give the local pantry as many free ads as they want, you know, or a local festival. Hey, I'll give you a back cover ad. Go for it. You know, have fun. Just list us as a sponsor. I sponsor things all the time. It's telling the community that you're here to stay and that you care about the community, and surviving as a business in a community requires that generosity of spirit. And I don't always see that with new businesses. I think they come in and they maybe read like a book by some money guru. What's that guy? Tony Robbins or something. They read these books by these money gurus, but the money gurus don't teach you like heart, and they don't teach you concern and empathy and love and those types of things. They don't teach you that. They teach you about flipping things and making quick profit and scaling and they don't teach you, like, maybe if you give a little, you get a little in return. So, who knows? That's the business. One last thing, I think, is if you're interested, I'm going to be teaching an online course that will teach you how to create or manage a publication from a technical layout standpoint using InDesign. And a little bit of Photoshop. So if you go to, let's see, what's the address? Go to CCC News /campus-news/bootcamp.html. So you're going to have to rewind this and write that all down. Or just email me at editor@journalandpress.com, and I'll send you a link. It's $199, but you'll learn like everything you need to know to start a publication. If you're willing to pay a little bit more, I'll even give you the templates to start your own publication or to manage one. Or if you're an educator and you want to teach classes how to teach using InDesign, I'll go over that too. So that is that. This is Weekly Newspaper Podcast. You can find these on weeklynewspaperpodcast.com. Hope I didn't ramble too much today. I've had this tooth problem, and it just affects, like, I think the speed at which I talk. All right. Anyway, weeklynewspaperpodcast.com.